most securely founded upon the study of the child. He has for nearly 50 years observed, interviewed, and tested children of all ages, and this enormous set of empirical data is the foundation of his theory. It's extremely advantageous for the person who is working with the young child to understand the intellectual development process in order to take advantage of the child's maximum readiness to assimilate an understanding. It is our job to arrange the child's environment to fit his needs at the moment so as to proceed with his developmental task. In other words, the developmental task is that thing, the next step for which he is ready. Each time a child learns something new, his cognitive structure stretches to process the information. According to Piaget, the cognitive structure is a system of organization in each individual which processes information. It consists of the perceptual devices or rules of thought and reasoning which structure the way we assimilate the environment, and knowledge grows. The more we learn about the child's rules for knowing, his adaptation or process of assimilation, the better able we are to understand the necessity for diversity of stimuli, in other words, the multiple approach to learning. We need to approach a specific learning in a variety of ways. In the nursery school environment, we might use a combination of all the senses through music, arts, crafts, scientific investigation, literature, games, drama, and block building, and maybe a field trip thrown in. Any stimuli which can be perceived or understood by the child is called, in Piaget's terms, his cognitive milieu. As the individual develops, the cognitive structure changes and the cognitive milieu. In other words, he will perceive experiences differently as he grows. He'll see things differently. He'll hear things differently. The same thing, but he'll hear it differently at different stages of development. According to Piaget, organization is the process by which the organism expands. It operates simultaneously with adaptation, which is the assimilating process of modifying the external world or his perceptions, his senses, in order to take it in. Function assimilation is a term Piaget uses for maximum readiness. This depends upon optimum environment, the very best environment. Our job as parent or teacher is to prepare the optimum environment for each child's intellectual, emotional, social, physical, and spiritual growth. A prepared environment is certainly the key to conceptual development. By carefully selecting and arranging materials, the adult will give the child an opportunity to learn through exploration. By making such things available as household scales, balancing scales, clocks, tape measures, rulers, thermometers, timers, measuring cups and spoons with things to measure, dial telephones, toy money, cash registers, an abacus, number puzzles, and plenty of objects to count, the teacher will encourage the development of mathematical concepts. Even through the little stories like the three bears or the three little kittens, the three little pigs. This is another approach to learning threeness. And then we talk about pairs of feet, pairs of eyes, pairs of ears, and so forth. There are little poems like the Ten Little Indians. He learns a number of concepts through these. We can prepare the environment for discovery in science by making available objects of nature, live animals, magnets, magnifying glasses, water, and so on. Children reveal through their conversation what they really understand, as well as misconceptions. And that's why it's so wise for the adult to listen in on these conversations. I think probably some of the best illustrations come from children's misconceptions of Bible stories. For instance, I heard about this little boy who was traveling with his parents across the plains of Texas at sundown, and everybody was exclaiming about the beautiful sunset, and the little boy says, "Yes, and you know, God painted that with his left hand." "Why did you say he painted it with his left hand?" "Well, Jesus was sitting on his right hand." And this is so typical. They take everything at face value, and we talk about this is God's house. Well, where does he eat? Where does he sleep? Right away, he wants to know, well, if this is God's house, he must live here like a person. So, and we talk about, we sing that song, "Come into my heart, Lord Jesus." Well, that is very frightening for some children. They don't want anything in their heart, and they feel that's an intrusion. So that song, "Come into my heart, Lord Jesus," to a child means something altogether different than it means to maybe an 8-year-old who can understand this kind of language. We need to be alert to the possibilities for conceptual learning in everyday experiences, like hanging up clothes, taking turns, lining up, getting and returning supplies, and playing games. The concept of position, distance, space, size, shape, time, speed, order are all developing through the experiences each day. For instance, family trips to the zoo, the beach, just playing in the housekeeping corner, cooking with mother in the kitchen or daddy in the kitchen, planting. All these create a need for knowing specific things, like measuring and how many. Through the ordinary play, such as block building, the child learns to understand more and less and bigger and smaller and taller and shorter and heavier and lighter. Games with nested blocks, cylinders, seriation, size differences, all of these are experiences that develop the concept in the child's mind through actually manipulating the things rather than just trying to talk about something that's abstract. Experience for developing 1 to 2 correspondents, that can be done just by setting the table. How many people are there? Takes one plate for every person, or one chair, 1 to 1. Measurement concepts, concepts of fractional parts, recognizing groups without counting, ordinals and sets can be planned through such tasks as putting the cups into the saucer on the tables, folding the napkins in half can give them a concept of the fraction. What is a half? Getting and even feeding the pet. How much shall we feed the pet? Stories, for instance, that contrast big and little. Lois Lenski is great. She has done a number of these types of stories, like The Little Farmer and The Little Fireman. This gives them the concept of big and little. One idea which is central to Piaget's approach to learning is that learning is creative. There are 2 dominant theories of the past with which Piaget disagrees. That is, that the mind acts like an action picture on a camera, like a motion picture, a camera, which merely records a pre-existing world of persons and things. And the second is that the mind is a projector of its own inborn films, those of experiencing the world. Now, Piaget argues that the mind is best thought of not as a mechanical contrivance, but rather as a creative artist, bringing his experience of reality and his inner vision together by means of a creative process whose result is a product that is not reducible to its components of inner vision and real experience. The inkblot test, for instance, is a simple demonstration. A child's idea about number, space, time, and causality are never direct copies of what he has been taught or experienced, nor are they ever simple projections of some fixed and innate ideas about these matters. If one low, fat pitcher and one tall, thin pitcher are filled with the same amount of milk, a small child will assume that the tall pitcher has more liquid in it than the short pitcher, even though he earlier saw the same milk in identical pitchers. We are apt to assume that children learn by copying a pre-existing reality instead of realizing that children are creating while learning. The way in which children learn and what they learn is very much determined by their level of mental development. According to Piaget, he has divided the growth period into different parts. For instance, he thinks of the birth to 5 years span as the sensory motor level or age. He is concerned with the creation of objects here, that is, the child is concerned with the creation of objects through his senses. During the first year, he doesn't see the difference as an infant between the object which disappears by itself from an object which disappears because he turns his head and can no longer see it. During the second year, the infant comes to construct a world of objects which have permanence and are here to stay. He can coordinate his sensory motor activities. He is beginning to use thought and imagination to show foresight and gains the ability to predict consequences of actions. He displays egocentric speech and thought, the tendency to assume all others see things as he sees them. Then there's the preoperational period, which is from 2 to 7 years. There is a gradual acquisition of ability to conserve and decenter, but he is not capable of operations, that is, an understanding of reversibility. There is a slow shift from egocentrism to a modest appreciation of other points of view. This is a time of confusion and, at worst, total illogic. He is a moral realist, concerned about only one aspect of a moral situation, and concentrates on material outcomes. He is rigid and literal in interpreting rules. For instance, he considers how many plates were broken. If they were dropped accidentally and 3 plates were broken, to him that is much worse than a child who on purpose broke a plate. He doesn't consider the reason why the action took place, but rather the end result. 3 broken plates are worse than 1 broken plate, even though those 3 broken plates were dropped accidentally and the 1 broken plate was deliberately broken. But that doesn't make any sense to him, that the child who just broke 1 plate should be punished more than the child who broke the 3 plates. But this is the way he thinks. He's rigid and literal in interpreting rules. From age 3 to 5, the major task is to create symbols. representing objects by images and words and genuine creations. Dressing up as adults is another representation. And of course, language is the major representational system. A cognitively oriented curriculum concerned primarily with the development of symbolic functioning is based on the assumption that intellectual growth is the result of the child's ability to create meaningful representations of himself and his environment and relate these representations to each other. Things or sounds stand for objects. Their representations and relationships are organized into some framework through which the child views the world. This framework constitutes the child's way at a given time of looking at and knowing about himself and his environment. As children discover things for themselves, they want to describe them, talk about them, ask questions, and tell others, either through spoken or body language, how they feel and what they think. Two-year-olds act out their feelings because they lack language skills. When we were in New Zealand, the little Maori island children couldn't handle the English language very well. So the director said, don't be concerned if you see them pushing each other around, because she says that's really the way they talk to each other and get the message through, just like a two-year-old who hasn't learned to talk well usually is pretty rough. He talks with his body. Don't rush reading, but begin by labeling things in their room around the house. Read to them. Nonfiction fascinates children. Let them sit in your lap and follow the words. Write letters for them that they dictate and let them read them back. Take them to the library early for a card. And if you can afford it, have a set of encyclopedias in the home. Let them take a magazine. And if there are favorite authors, stories that they have, encourage them as they get older and can write to the authors. It's a wonderful experience for a child. You'd be amazed how often the authors really write back. And a letter to a child with his name on the envelope is very, very exciting. I know when I write to my daughter and her family, I always address it to Eric Griffin and parents, because if he doesn't get anything in the mail, he feels very put out. And if she gives him one of her letters, he says, it's not my name on it. But if his name is on the envelope, why, that is really a big day for him. Play word games with the children. Puzzles that match the name of the object with the picture. Rhyming games, nursery rhymes, and the telephone is a wonderful play instrument, a toy. If you have two telephones and two children playing in the same room, you can learn a lot by their telephone conversation. Cognition is characterized by adaptation. The child both adapts incoming knowledge to his view of the world and adapts his view of the world to the new knowledge. The structure of intelligence is always potentially modifiable in the direction of greater complexity and abstractness. The thought process of the pre-operational child is largely intuitive. Cognition or understanding is guided by perception, taking it through his senses, rather than by rational considerations. The child tends to center on one particular static feature of the environment at a time. What is sees at the moment is what is real to him. His thought is characterized by instability and lack of organization. In this period, we see the beginning of the reversible systems of operations. For instance, now if he sees an upside down table, to him it's still a table. Earlier, it wasn't a table if it was upside down. The child begins to deal with his environment through mental manipulations rather than direct overt actions. For now, the overt actions have been internalized as images or mental pictures. When mental images and representation appears, the child is able to deal with objects when they are not physically present or when they are partly hidden. The child attributes permanency to objects so that when it is completely or partially removed from his immediate sight or perception, he knows that it still exists. Now the child learns to attribute size and shape constancy to objects. He knows that leaves are green, that the sky is blue. In planning activities for the child, we need to plan them in sequence through which he can build his ability to represent. We must ask ourselves, which level is predominant, the motor level or the verbal level? He first needs the index level of representation, which includes his dealing with real objects. This will enable him to form clear mental images, which will help him in moving from one level to the next. Materials and experiences should be as realistic and concrete as possible, providing a link between real objects and events. He then moves to the symbol level, where he is able to deal with constructions which stand for objects or events. Here he engages in motor encoding, where he uses his body to represent objects or events, and uses objects to represent other objects. Three components of the motor encoding are make-believe, imitation, and socio-dramatic play. He will create symbols of his own with clay and drawings. So we should encourage the pretend-like play that a child naturally goes into at this age level. And I think many parents are don't know just what to make of imaginary playthings or imaginary playmates. I know our children had two imaginary playmates, Henry and Japheth. And Henry and Japheth always went with us on trips. And it's really nice because they don't clutter up the car at all. And they, but for some reason or other, the children are kept very busy keeping Henry and Japheth out of trouble. They're very, very naughty children. And I'm sure that you either remember an imaginary playmate you had or an imaginary playmate that your children have had. Can anyone tell us about that? I think that it's very interesting to hear about the various imaginary people that
I was working as a governess one summer, and a three-year-old boy had an imaginary cat named Lucy that was black and white, and Lucy came everywhere with us, and yeah. So real that I saw her too.
You know? Yeah, you saw her too. they can be very convincing. Mm-hmm. Right. And some parents worry about that, but it's a very, very normal process of development. It's something that a child goes through that helps him grow at that particular age.
What was the particular age again?
From 3 to 5 is the age when usually those things are. They continue. If they continue until they get too big, you know, you do begin to worry. But between 3 and 5, it's very, yes, if they start playing, taking imaginary friends to high school, you can start to worry about it. But it is, I had a little niece who had an imaginary friend. It was her alter ego. Anytime that Nancy did something naughty, broke something, or did something that was against the rules, and she was found out, it was all, I can't remember the name of her alter ego, but it was always that other imaginary person who had done it. And but not Nancy. It's wonderful. An imagination, you see, it takes imagination to develop a creative person, and we need creative people. So let's allow the children to pretend for all they're worth. There is a fine line between pretending and lying, of course. And I think that we should label it that way. Well, that was a nice pretend-like story. You know, usually if you hear a tall one and come back with, that was a good pretend-like story. I had one child who did that, and he said, it's not a pretend-like story. He had been telling me how these animals had roared all night long, lions and tigers, and he couldn't sleep. He had a very bad night. And I said, that's a nice pretend-like story. It's not pretend-like. And so he persisted with this story over and over again. Finally, I asked his mother, and she says, well, you know, we just moved from such and such a place, and we lived just across from the zoo. It wasn't a pretend-like story at all. It was really real, so we never know. But I think we should handle those things as diplomatically as possible, because the minute we start labeling a child as a liar, he can become a liar. You know, they live up to those the reputation that they get. One of the chief tasks of the pre-operational child is to develop an ability to construct and make use of relationships among things in his environment and expand his system of relationships into an organized way of dealing with the world. For instance, cats. There are all kinds of cats, but they have relationships. There are certain things about cats that are the same. Every cat has claws and has soft paws. And while a dog is different from cats. Dogs are over here in one category. Cats are over here in a different category. Do you remember, Fran, when your cousins were over at your house and they had a mother who was very Swedish, and this little one was looking out the door, the window, and there were two dogs out there, one little tiny dog and one great big dog, and he looked at his mother and he said, "Is them both dogs?" They all had, there was a relationship there that he saw, but yet those dogs look entirely different. But yet, there was something about him that spoke to him and said they were wolf dogs. if we teach children how to look for relationships, this will help their intelligence expand. For instance, I think I've mentioned this probably in one of my other sessions. When they go to the zoo, and if they realize there are carnivorous, omnivorous, and herbivorous animals, and they know how to tell
that a carnivorous animal, a meat-eating animal, has to have claws. And an herbivorous animal has hoofs because they have to eat herbs and grasses. They don't have claws to catch their meat. And that omnivorous animals have paws like we do. They eat both meat and herbs. Then they can really go into the zoo and determine what the different animals eat and how they live by knowing how to look for relationships, likenesses and differences. As he learns, he sees relationships, he'll begin to construct his own, seeing similarities and differences in all of his environment, including the behavior of those around him, the consistencies and discrepancies. And he's able to construct these relationships. As he's able to construct these relationships, he will make use of them. So we should encourage things like collecting rocks, looking at them and seeing how different they are, but yet how alike they are. Shells, and then as he gets older, maybe stamps and coins, but always things that he can categorize. This will help him put things in order in his mind. Through a child's drawings and paintings, we will observe his ability to construct meaningful representations. And it's fun to keep a series of your child's drawings of himself through his pre-operational stages. And you'll notice how, at first, he sees the head as the important part of his anatomy. So that'll be usually very big with a little tiny body and maybe just a stick with a couple of stick legs and arms. But the head is way out of proportion because to him is the most important. And as he begins to see himself and others more realistically, proportions begin to change. And usually when the child starts a nursery school, one of the first things you do in order to, when you're trying to develop the self-image and all, is to have him lie down on a piece of butcher paper and draw around him. And then let them color in the eyes and the hair and the clothes and everything. This will give him a very realistic picture of just how big he is and how his arms and legs are in proportion to the rest of his body, in the same way with his head. Piaget emphasizes two kinds of elementary relationships: the logico-mathematical and the spatio-temporal. The logical-mathematical is approached in nursery school through grouping or classifying into a set. Things that go together either because they are used for some activity, like the spoon and the fork for eating, and then things that go together because they get their meaning from one another, like the hammer and the nail go together. Things that go together because of descriptive discrimination, such as size or shape or color, putting all the blocks of one size together, or all the red squares together. For instance, these little cubes, you can get the sets of little inch cubes at educational supply stores that they have. They're enameled in, probably six different colors. And I think they're one of the greatest learning tools that a person can buy for a young child. You can do so many things with them. Give me two red ones, give me two green ones, you know, how many are there? And lining, patterning is another good way to help a child's intellectual development by giving him a pattern of blue, green, red, and then let him pattern either with the blocks or with colored beads. Blue, green, red, blue, green, red, and so forth. If you, the educational supply stores have these educational games. They're just as fun to play as any kind, but they're developmental in their design. And they help children with just these things, categorizing, pairing, fitting together, discriminating. Spatio-temporal relationships are those related to time and space. How he perceives himself in space and how he perceives relationships in space is approached through expressions of the orientation of his body and the orientation of other objects in space. For instance, crawling through a tunnel, a toy tunnel, you've seen those that you can spread out and they crawl through, gives them a feeling of the extremities of their body, how big their body is by going through the tunnel if it touches the sides. This is a very good exercise for a child. And then playing with hoops, crawling through hoops, making designs with ropes and jumping into the circles or whatever they make, using ropes in different ways, and dowel rods, then obstacle courses, dance, and other forms of movement education will aid in this respect, getting a feeling of where their body is and what their body can do. The temporal relationships have to do with his understanding of time periods, which can be of varying length. You've heard that house, and you get in the car, you're going someplace, you tell them it's going to take 3 days to get there, and they're in the car half an hour, and how soon did we get there, you know? They have no idea of time space. He begins to understand how events are ordered chronologically. These little sequin puzzles, I don't know if you're familiar with those, which picture these events in sequence, like a seed, a sprout, a plant, a blossom, then the fruit. Or the sequence of stories. I remember our youngest child, when she was five, just loved to fold a paper in four parts and then make pictures like a cartoon with a story, starting up here, a picture story. And she couldn't write any words, but you could look at that and you'd know what her story was about because her people were doing things in those sequential pictures. She still loves to do that sort of thing, you know, loves to draw and illustrate things. It has started at a very early age. Activities of the day mark out time for the child, like after lunch, we'll do it after lunch. Well, we'll have rest time first. Well, you can have a dessert after supper or for supper. Then there's bedtime and so forth. So they think of times of day by the things that they do at certain times of day. As they wait for their classroom eggs to hatch, it helps to mark each day as it passes until the day when the eggs are due to hatch. Approaching holidays can be marked in the same way. And I'm sure you're all familiar with the Advent calendar. It's really great. Then they can see how soon, as each day passes, how much closer they're getting to Christmas. Most of the time explaining to a child does not increase understanding. Oh, when I think of the words I've wasted. It lessens it. The understanding must be experienced and discovered, then used creatively under new circumstances. In the church school setting, we usually say a lesson must be lived in order to be learned. And I think that's true anywhere. Do any of you people have, was talking, did any illustrations come to your mind?
I'm thinking of one just now when you said they have to experience it. Bill, when he was about three, I guess, was our house. He and I were sitting in the front of the room and the rest were out doing something else. It was kind of cool. We were covered up with a blanket, in fact. And I said, oh, listen to the frog.
Listen to the what?
Listen to the frog.
Oh.
Listen, and we heard an owl off in the distance, you know. And I was talking, trying to say, you know, this is, no, just, this is what you're supposed to be hearing. And pretty soon he says, Grandma, don't talk. Let's just listen.
Good advice.
I learned my lesson.
Yes. Oh, that's beautiful. For you people who deal with older children, I have this thing called 35 Ways to Help Children Learn. I'm not going to read all 35, but these are just some ideas that I'm going to throw out to you, that even though your children aren't that age yet, they will get there before you know it. Encourage your child to be a collector. Provide a place for his collections, even if it's just a dresser drawer, a soapbox, or a shelf in the bookcase, all his own. An upended orange crate provides shelves for display of rocks, insects, leaves, stamps, and shells. A dime store picture frame can display your child's summer collection of flowers and leaves. Ride along with the zooming interest in outer space and buy an inexpensive telescope. The whole family can track satellites and study moon craters. Help him decorate his room with a chart of the solar system. He may explore it someday. Help your youngster to develop the scientific attitude, bringing the scientific approach to bear on everyday events. When someone makes a broad general statement, challenge it with the question, how do you know it's true? Where did you get your statistics? Let me see your proof. Such a discussion sparks youngsters to a dogged tracking down of facts, and it teaches them above all to approach all generalities with a critical, you've got to show me. I know children are different in their curiosity, and our oldest child couldn't wait to look something up. If there was a question that came up at the supper table, for instance, that no one knew the answer to, she'd say, just excuse me a minute, and off she'd go get an encyclopedia. She was just in second grade, but she had learned that there's a place you can find out. And someone told me in a group the other day that they had to finally move their encyclopedia into the dining room, because that's usually where the questions came up. So they had easy access to find the answers. And it's such a wonderful habit to get into. I've got to find out. I need to know. Curiosity, as Joseph Sittler said, is the peculiar joy of the mind. Ask the teacher and the librarian to suggest biographies of pioneers in science which you can read along with your child. When a birthday or Christmas rolls around, consider giving him a subscription to a scientific magazine, an easy-to-assemble radio earphone set, a general science kit, an ant farm or toy farm that grows real crops, or any of the other scientific toys, games, or kits elbowing each other on store shelves those days. And you know, there are some beautiful children's magazines. Ranger Rick, for instance, was one of our children's favorites. And then the National Geographic also has a, what is that?
World Geographic.
Yeah. And a magazine that comes every month can be a real source of joy and information for your child. Keep an atlas, almanac, dictionary, and globe conveniently close to this TV set for use during news and documentary programs. On trips, provide your youngster with notebooks and pencil. Encourage him to draw pictures and make notes of things that interest him along the way. State capitals, factories, waterways, animals. Help him collect samples of things to take back to the classroom. Spanish moss in Louisiana, shells on beaches, cotton in the south. We picked up our twins a year ago in January up in Massachusetts to take them with us to their new home in California. And it was a real treat for both of us because we had not been living very close and didn't get to see each other very often. But here we are where we had two wonderful weeks in a camp mobile together. And one of the things we did along the way as we visited historical places was to take a picture of them there. And I remember when we were in Florida where they had the Indian River grapefruit. We had to take a picture of them holding a sack of Indian River grapefruit. And when we were at the past the Suwannee River, we had to take a picture under the sign, Suwannee River. And you know, just the fact that they were going to have to have their picture taken on this historical spot made a lot of difference to them. It added an emotional impact, you might say, to the whole experience. Load up on back issues of the National Geographic at your secondhand bookstore. Turn your child loose with them and on the next rainy day, he'll read them. Make scrapbooks and posters and learn lots about the world he's living in. Teach your child the importance of being a good citizen by discussing at the dinner table local candidates for public office, issues and problems of your community. Map puzzles are good learn-as-you-play items for youngsters. Distinctive shapes of states, countries, continents form pictures in his mind to help him learn and remember. Help your child to judge each person individually rather than by race, creed, color. How? By curbing your own unthinking remarks about others. Guess we don't have supper until 5:30 today, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, so we have... you better run. When your child is learning to read, try labeling household objects with their names printed in big bold letters on masking tape. Introduce your child early to the wonders of the public library. Let him browse there while you shop at the supermarket. As soon as possible, let him apply for his own card and lending privileges. After he learns how to use the card catalog in the library, suggest that he make his own personal library catalog at home. Before you select books for birthday or Christmas, ask his teacher's advice. She will recommend fiction, fact books, and biographies tailored for his age group and his skill in reading. And that dovetail with topics and times being studied in school. Subscribe to a children's magazine for him. He will love the idea of having his very own periodical. Provide him with books of special interest to him. A boy who finds the classics a bore may devour books on mechanics, outer space, or Beatles. Word games like Scrabble, Third of a Ghost and Hangman can help your child increase his vocabulary and improve his spelling. Creative arts. Let him be a music maker as well as a listener. Toy piano, drum, a tonette, tune bells, or mouth organ can help him learn the rudiments of rhythm and tone. As soon as he's old enough to operate, get him a record player. If you don't live near a good record shop, join a children's record club or borrow records from the public library. To encourage creative writing, jot down stories your child tells, songs he makes up. Show them to him later. Suggest he illustrate them and publish them in a book for grandparents or other relatives at Christmas. Good prints are plentiful and inexpensive. Why not turn kitchen, bathroom, and other rooms in the house into an art exhibit? Don't bother to frame the pictures. Stick them to the walls with tape and change them frequently. You'll want to display some of your child's crayon or finger paint masterpieces too. Give your child child frequent opportunities to express himself artistically, yet practically. Have him decorate the dinner table for Easter or Halloween. Encourage him to make his own Christmas cards or Valentines. And then it goes on to encourage and talk about foreign languages. If your child is learning a foreign language, ask the local bookstore clerk if there are games or flashcards in that language. And I think if you have a nursery school, if you're working with nursery school children or first graders, if there's somebody you know who is very fluent in a, or is from a foreign country and is fluent in that language, have them come and teach them games and that will help them learn at least some nouns or polite phrases. I know I had such a delightful person like that that helped me with our lab school at Augustana. And she had spent 2 years at the Sorbonne Institute, so was very fluent in French. And the children just loved to greet each other in French, and when they left, they did the same. And she had a game where she put objects in the center, and then she'd ask them to bring her different things, and she would use the French name until they had learned the French name of all those objects. And one of the little boys was his father was transferred to Madrid, Spain, and someone asked him if he spoke Spanish, and he said, "No, but I do speak French." they really like to have that skill. And yes.
What do you think of Sesame Street?
Well, I think I have mixed feelings about Sesame
Street.
When
you start talking about a foreign language, we find Margaret Ann just every now and then coming out with something in Spanish.
Spanish, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they have some very good things, and I think this Spanish, these Spanish lessons must be very good. See, I don't watch Sesame Street.
I don't either.
It's only by accident, and I always get the impression it's awful loud and. There's an awful lot of movement. Do the children, you know, does it excite the children too much? Or, you know, I don't know.
The little bit I've seen, it certainly looks like it's very informative.
Oh, it is, I'm sure.
I can just sit and watch Sesame Street all by myself.
Well, educators have mixed, that's all really all I know. Educators have mixed opinions about Sesame Street. But I wouldn't worry that it's doing too much damage. Of course, they use some questionable words to my mind.
Watch it enough, so
yeah, well, and pretty slangy, if you know what I mean.
I don't think so.
I think that's so that it'll have a general appeal, probably, to the children. Here are just some general tips. When he's writing a school paper, show him that information from several sources. So show him that information from several sources is better than relying on just one book. This way he'll get acquainted with the wide world of available sources that awaits him on any given topic. Give him lots of chances to use the written word. Let him write your grocery lists, put names on in your address book, send thank you notes for gifts received and parties attended. Suggest a backyard mailbox for exchanging regular letters with the child next door. I hadn't thought of that one. Don't be afraid to guide dinner table talk with your teenagers into the fascinating realm of ideas. Junior high and high school students love bull sessions on serious topics. Does your child hate a certain subject? Find out why. Maybe the teacher is moving along too quickly for him. Maybe he has caught your aversion to a certain subject. Seek the reason behind his dislike, then enlist his teacher's help so that you can work together to conquer it. How about taking some adult education courses yourself? Your child will be impressed by the fact that you consider learning an interesting activity, not a chore. He'll get a kick out of seeing you buckle down to homework. Okay, thanks a lot.